The madness has officially begun, and it's time for you to shoot your shot and score big on the nonstop action with MyBookie. It doesn't matter whether you're filling out multiple brackets, betting the national championship winner, or simply looking for player and game props. MyBookie has you covered. Sign up today at MyBookie and use the promo code TASKMASTER to secure a first deposit bonus up to $1,000. It's simple, folks. Put in $200 and play with $300. Just use the promo code TASKMASTER and claim your bonus. College ball, NBA, and UFC, no matter the sport, no matter the minute, MyBookie puts the action in your hands with in-game live betting. And with the choice from thousands of lines and odds, you can turn any game day into payday. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Just don't forget to use that promo code TASKMASTER. Remember, you can bet anything, you can bet anytime, you can bet anywhere with MyBookie. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. Of course, with me is the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest bookers and minds ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, JP. As I told you off camera, I just came back from doing the Vice's new program, The Territories, and it was very good. I really enjoyed it. I got to see Gerald Briscoe, Steve Kern, Bob Roop, and Brian Blair. It was very enjoyable.
When do you think that's going to air?
It's September. Yeah,
so
they're doing a series about The Territories. So it'll be good. It'll bring people back in the day. No.
Good idea. I mean, obviously, Dark Side of the Ring kind of jumped the shark a bit, and I know we mentioned it. They had some problems, and a lot of people were against a lot of the stuff that they put out, but, you know, they did put out some good episodes, though.
Yeah, but like we talked about, you're asking guys to remember in detail 25 years ago, and especially the plane rides from hell. There was a bunch of them in WWF, you know what I mean? And people got them, confused. Like Rob Van Dam was very upset at them. Wasn't Jim Ross very upset at them also?
Yep. Tommy Dreamer, Flair, yep.
Yeah, so this was, I think, a much, there was a little bit of dark side to our thing, too. You know, we had Eddie Graham, Mike Graham, you know, sad endings. Eddie's brother Skip, sad ending. Mike's son, a sad ending. I mean, Mike's grandfather, a sad ending. So it wasn't just all roses, but it was good to go back to when there was when I broke into business, there were 37 territories. So it was a different time, a different era, and evolution. It had to evolve to what it is today. And, you know, you learn from your history. And if you don't follow history, you make the same mistakes again.
You think they will ever go back to those territory days?
No. I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way. Okay, JP?
Mm-hmm.
You remember when Buddy Rogers beat Pat O'Connor for the World Heavyweight title in Comiskey Park? I think it was 61.
Yep.
Okay. I think there was 36,000 people there. The next weekend, there was another event at Comiskey Park, and it wasn't baseball. They drew 43,000 people. What do you think it was?
A lot.
What?
A lot, like a lot of people, right?
What do you think it was, the event that drew the? It wasn't baseball. It wasn't.
No.
In White Sox. So what do you think 43,000 people came to see?
Well, either...
wasn't a concert.
Wrestling or roller derby, right?
It was roller derby.
Crazy.
The deeper UFC gets. Right now, UFC needs another Conor McGregor or Ronda Rousey. And not, they're doing numbers that are very good in this day and age for television because of streaming and everything else. But they're facing, how much longer can the fans want to know about behind the scenes, the real side of the guys, rather than what the matches are? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
I'm going to go one step further. Suppose we're watching the Super Bowl. And a guy runs out and steals the ball, and the game's going to be replayed next week. Are you going to watch that?
No.
Probably for the first time. Are you going to watch it for third time they do it?
No, not definitely not.
We're getting to a point now where I don't want to get political, but politics has really become the reality show. Crazy, you know, crazy reality. So they're doing wrestling better than wrestling is doing. I mean, they have great baby faces. They have great heels. They have, baby faces and heels. They have their Clint Eastwoods. They got their big time villains on the other side. They got the country split between two ways. Everybody's watching this. We should take a notice of what they're doing and go back to, let's tighten up our business just a little. You can't go back, as Jimmy Cornette says, put the toothpaste back in the tube. You can't do that. But just let's close it up a little, like The Undertaker did for all those years until now. Just a little. I'm not saying as much as he did, but just a little. So they start to say, well, maybe this guy's... Hey, they pay to see Brock and Roman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is Brock and Roman, are their matches solid?
Always.
Maybe we should start to do something like that. And look how Brock transformed from the killing machine to the lovable goof in high school that lived out in the woods. Right? Am I wrong by calling him that?
Yeah, for sure.
Isn't that what he is?
Yeah, I think so.
He's got the smile. He's got the shirt cut off to show his muscles. He's got the goofy hairdo. I mean, and then you got the other guy that my wife thinks is the most handsomest guy that ever walked the planet. You know, it's the old thing that Nash says. They either want to beat you up or want to be with you. So, little. And by every guy that is working at a company or gym membership.
Seems that a lot of guys in AEW are not in, you know, not in bad shape per se, but they're not in wrestling shape, I don't think. Anyway, even the guys that left NXT are in AEW now. They look different. They definitely haven't been hitting the gym.
Haven't been hitting the gym? I'm sorry.
No, definitely not. A couple of them, definitely not.
I just had watched the Sabu interview on YouTube. His uncle, the Sheik, told him at the beginning of his career, when the guys in the that pay to see you look better than you, you're only going to go so far.
Not a bad thought. I agree. You don't want to look like the guys in the crowd or worse than the guys in the crowd. Yeah.
Right.
So as far as today, and just going back into the history books here, I want to go back to 1991, Super Brawl 1, which was on May 19th, St. Petersburg, Florida, at the Bayfront Center. The attendance was over 6,000. The tagline is "The Return from the Rising Sun," and the pay-per-view buy rate was 150K. So not bad here, 6,000 in attendance, 150K on pay-per-view, and St. Petersburg, your home away from home.
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt you. That's 150K
mm-hmm.
with a guy that wasn't a regular on our TV against Ric Flair that didn't speak very good English.
It's true.
That was a match that was designed to see a world title match. So I think today that would translate to 400,000 buy rates. It's going back to what I said earlier about tightening it up a little. There was no gaga going into that match. And
John, I'm on the phone, buddy.
WWF at the time.
Tell me later.
Had a huge jump on us, right? So there were people that were tuning in to see. I'm not going to say they thought it was completely real, but they knew they were going to see a masterful match. What do you think?
Absolutely.
About those comments?
Absolutely, because, I mean, you're going to definitely see a big title match, plus the fact that it was a rematch from the WCW New Japan Super Show that was kind of clouded in some controversy. It was just interesting the way it was done. It was from March 21st, 91. It was kind of a big foray for WCW and New Japan to have this big team up together. Flair versus Fujinami is the main event. Interesting, though, when it was 65,000 people in the Tokyo Dome. So, I mean, it's a huge, huge show headlined by Flair and Fujinami. Flair's NWA championship, quote unquote, is on the line, but not the WCW championship. But in the U.S. for WCW, that was considered just one belt. So the pay-per-view announcers were explaining that Fujinami's IWGP World Heavyweight Championship is on the line, and Flair's quote-unquote NWA championship, but not WCW. Very weird and kind of, I don't know, kind of doesn't make sense, but, right? I mean, like, weird way to go about it.
I thought it was horribly designed.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was horribly designed. That's like saying, and they've done it in boxing, John. You know that, right, JP?
Oh, yeah, all where, the time, yeah.
Didn't Tyson, when he lost, one of the times he lost the WBC, but he didn't lose the WBA, some bullshit like that. I mean, come on, if you lose, you lose the championship, you know? You don't lose the lineal championship. I don't know who came up with that, whose brainstorm that was, but they didn't know wrestling.
And the outcome of the match, too, was different in Japan than what it was in the U.S. So the outcome really is Flair gets pinned by Fujinami, counted by Tiger Hattori, who replaced the NWA referee Bill Alfonso, who was knocked out during a spot in the match. So then Fujinami wins the U.S. championship. But the title change was ignored in the U.S., claiming that Fujinami had been disqualified for throwing Ric Flair over the top rope and that Alfonso had been knocked out. Thus, Fujinami could not win the match. So the rematch here at Super Bowl between the two was for the NWA title, which is really the WCW title in essence, but all the promotional material for WCW said it was a rematch. All the Japan material said that it was a rematch, but it wasn't one of the things where Flair is defending the title. It was a rematch for Flair, and Fujinami was defending the title. So very, very confusing, like the way it was set up differently in the U.S. than Japan.
I can make it a lot clearer for you.
Yeah,
okay?
Yep.
Well, I was just advice. And, you know, they're talking about that's a dusty finish, right?
Yes, big time.
I said that is not a dusty finish.
Hmm.
One time when I was being the surrogate son for Eddie, I watched the best of 1972 championship wrestling from Florida. They played at the end of the year. After it played, that was on Saturday. Sunday, I went fishing with Eddie. I go on there, and I almost cost the booker his job. It was Louis Pellette, a very, very smart guy. Very smart. Pat Patterson smart. French-Canadian. Eddie said, what do you think of matches? And every one, the referee got knocked down the finish. He said, what? I said, everyone, the referee got knocked down the finish. So you're promoting, Eddie, that every championship match, the referee's going to get knocked down and it's going to be a screwed finish. He went out of his mind. You can only do that bullshit. And I saw it just recently, and I don't know. And this is no disrespect to anybody. You know when I talk about patents, John?
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst thing we can fall into as a, I don't know, an agent or a booker or whatever they want to call it today. You should write your finishes down and don't go into the, oh, what are we going to do tonight? Hey, we'll have the referee bump. They used to start finishes like this. Referee, we'll do a referee bump. Wait a minute. We did that 3 weeks ago. Either the referees were incompetent or this doesn't work. So, and then they added the other stipulation. You didn't know who won the belt or who was champion. It was the perfect example where WCW was in 1991.
Yeah, who is kind of like responsible for all this? I mean, obviously they're trying to make New Japan happy, but it's so convoluted and confusing, so they're trying to make WCW happy. It doesn't really work that way, right?
No, it doesn't. I don't know, but I'm going to say, wasn't heard there then, but not
yes.
Now.
Yep.
And I think he kind of Jesus to him at the time. Do you know what I'm saying? Because this is TBS, and they're going to think, well, TBS had to hire someone that knows everything about pro wrestling. Right? And I think they probably listened. They were in a state of shock, but they said, well, that's what they probably do in the U.S. So, I have no idea.
So when people say dusty finish, I mean, is that like a good thing or a bad thing? Because I think a lot of people have negative connotations towards the dusty finish.
Well, what I'm saying, it wasn't a dusty finish. Dusty just saw it done. It started with history lessons. Alert, alert, alert. It started with Doc Sapolis in Houston in the early 50s, transferred to the Funks, transferred to Eddie Graham, who transferred it to Florida, who Louis Tillett was one of the early bookers. It was then transferred to a lot of the bookers and a lot of the very smart guys in the wrestling business. But we all fall in patents. That's why I say, if you're an agent or whatever you're doing, you should write your finishes down to know what you did 3 months ago.
When people say, though, like, for this, like, ah, oh, dusty finish, like, do you always just think of just not even just that effect is called dusty finish, but the actual finish of that? Do you hate that just in general? Should the world title match always have some sort of clean finish?
Again, it's not a dusty finish, but Dusty gets the blame for it because it was soft on national TV when Dusty was in power, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yep. What do you think?
You remember I told you about Goldberg when they told me he was going to lose? I said, let him turnbuckle Kevin, charge. Kevin moves out of the way. He hits the post. He comes out. Kevin powerbombs him and beats him. I said, let's have him lose the way he got there. Not cattle prod, 12 people, 16 pairs of handcuffs, a partridge in a pear tree, and six singing swans. I just believe that our championship belt should be protected at all times. And they're doing a great job with it with Roman Reigns.
No doubt about that. It's just interesting here because, like, if you look at the actual promo poster, you know, Return from the Rising Sun, Flair's holding the belt, Fujinami's holding the belt. Like, there's only really one way to kind of promote it. It's like champion versus champion. But just because of all the convoluted finish with the New Japan WCW Super Show, it's almost like who the hell really is the champion? And, you know, depending on which country you're in, that's how you got to figure it out. But it's almost like, man, they couldn't just make it straight. Like, so is Flair really booking at this point, though? Or I know you're part of the committee, too, but is Flair, like, the head guy okaying all this?
No, I think this was one of those deals where Jim had stepped in on this, meaning Jim heard that he was dealing with the Japanese, and then they both were, agreeing to every term the other guy threw at them. I don't think the Japanese were happy with the finish.
No, definitely not. They couldn't have been. But, you know, you do have a big return match here. Obviously, 65,000 for New Japan. I mean, you guys only drew 6,000 here. Were you guys trying to get more of a relationship with New Japan? Because they were super popular at this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we certainly were. I mean, they're doing how many people? 65,000?
Yep.
Who wouldn't want to get in the bed with that, right?
Yeah.
I think we blew that deal, too, this way. Rather than having some goofy match with the Ding Dongs on, right? Let me ask you, you're going to see the Ding Dongs versus the Interns? Or are you going to see an angle from Japan with Fujinami and Jumbo Tsuruga? Which would have done better on the TV?
I would think that Jumbo and Fujinami. I mean, the Ding Dongs was a terrible gimmick. But yeah.
I was beating the drum for that because I saw where Hurd thought he was going to try to out Vince McMahon with goofy gimmicks. And I thought, oof, maybe if we present it that we're trying to solidify a Japanese position, that he would go for it. And I thought it would have helped us, because the Japanese matches were incredible then. I think more incredible then than they are now. It would have made our show a lot more solid, taken away a lot of the bullshit, but Hurd knew better because he put double pepperoni on pizzas.
So as far as the actual show, I mean, we're talking about like the build-up, and obviously we know what the main event is, but interesting to note here, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash will both be debuting kind of newer characters on this show, as Nash would be Oz, and obviously Scott Hall would be the Diamond Stud. He won't be wrestling on the show, but he comes out for a little thing with DDP, and he shows his newfound charisma and cockiness as the Diamond Stud. So just kind of interesting that that duo would show up many, many years later and obviously have a huge impact and be the real game changers of wrestling. Just interesting to note there. Maybe not the best characters. Well, Diamond Stud's cool, but Oz is awful.
Horrible. Let me ask you this. You're the booker, and you want to make sure you're solidified in the top spot. Along comes a 7-foot bodybuilding champion who's witty as shit, can talk on any subject, cuts a great interview. Green, yes, but Goldberg was green too, ladies and gentlemen. When are you started by beating Hugh Morris? Why would you beat a guy or put him in a dunce cap unless you wanted to squash him, from want to step on the egg of the serpent before he grew?
Was that a Jim Hurd idea, Oz?
No.
Wow, whose idea was
it? You know how much this Dusty's. You know how much they spent on that set in Orlando? I mean, in St. Pete, where he first came out?
Mm-hmm. How much?
Over $120,000. That's 25 years ago, 28 years ago.
Wow. What a ripoff. What a misuse of money, too.
Yeah.
Huh, what a waste. And obviously, you know, I guess maybe Turner owns Wizard of Oz, or owned Wizard of Oz. I don't know if did that play anything into it?
Yeah, that's what it's all about. That was all it was all about. They bought the library. Good catch, JP. You are absolutely right. They're trying to integrate Turner Classics with wrestling.
Some things just don't go together.
No.
You know, that would be one of them.
You know, it's like to make sushi and milk.
Yeah, that's disgusting. Yeah, that doesn't go together at all.
Yeah.
So the first matchup, well, Brandi Brown, whoever the heck that is, does America the Beautiful, and we're off and running here. The first match, the Fabulous Freebirds, Michael Hayes and Jimmy Garvin, defeat the Young Pistols, Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong, for the vacant WCW United States Tag Team Championship. The match was actually, it goes about 10 minutes, but the match is actually pretty good. I think the Young Pistols were damn good, Armstrong and Smothers. And obviously, the Freebirds were okay. I mean, I like Michael P.S. Hayes, but obviously Smothers and Armstrong are the two workers.
Let me ask you this. Can you tell me an Armstrong that can't work?
No.
That's up. And Tracy was a great performer. Funny. Somehow. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's funny. I think Road Dogg is the worst one, but he's the most famous. But not worst, but I mean, maybe the least worker, but he's probably the most charismatic.
Yeah, the greatest stock of all times. So I just saw him about a month ago. And I said, if Brad could have talked like you, or you could have worked with for Brad, you've both been world champions. And we laughed, and it was the truth. I mean, he was the least smoothest worker of all the Armstrongs.
But the best talker.
But he was the greatest talker. Got that from his dad. But Tracy, you know, I've been getting into a time you look back in your life and reflect on different things. And sometimes you see guys and you say, what happened to them? You say, something had to happen to them to get into this position physically and mentally, because I believe your mental health has a lot to do with your physical health. And Tracy could have been a huge star, but something happened. I believe, maybe I'm being an amateur psychiatrist, something must have happened in his life that was so overcoming that he kind of went into a shell. Because when I first put those guys together as the Wild Eye Southern Boys, actually it was Sir Oliver Humperdinck, who was my assistant in Florida. And brother, those kids got over. And they would have been like 20 and 21. And they got over. How that didn't last is beyond me.
Yeah, it's crazy. I wanted to fail to mention.
It could have been like the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah, I would have loved it. That would have been great. They had that kind of run. And I would have bought it, too, because I love both those guys, especially Tracy.
Yeah. And they were, you know, we talked about their body-wise. They looked great, but they could get in that position where they could sell. And when they made the comebacks, they had fire. They had everything going. Why didn't... What happened that they got derailed? Was it our fault? Was it something that we can't explain? Was there an injury? There had to be something, but we missed the boat on them.
Dusty and JR are on the call for this one. The next match, Dan Spivey defeats Ricky Morton in about 3 minutes. Really must be giving Spivey a bit of a push here because it's kind of a squash match.
Now, that you said that, that jumps out and punches me in the face. How do you beat Ricky Morton in 3 minutes? A guy that's drawn, people don't understand how much money Ricky and Robert have drawn. I mean, they got a deal. Crockett got a deal on some kind of blue jeans with them promoting it, and they didn't get a dime. These guys were phenomenal. You heard the story about Dusty being pissed off because they outdrew him in a small town with nobody on the card. I mean, I don't know what the hell we were thinking of. I hope to God I raised my hand. I can't remember. I hope I raised my hand and said something in Ricky's defense and not gone along with it. I hope. I hope. I'm not saying I did. I just hope. Maybe we thought Danny Spivey was the next big thing. He could have been the next big thing, but he could have had a match of 10 minutes with Ricky. It would have made him better than a 3 minute. I just don't understand what we're thinking there. But I'm going to give us a bit of an out here, okay? Not saying we're right. But Hearn loved the big guys. And he didn't understand who Ricky Morton was. So maybe we got the pressure that way. And not Barry and Ross, but he might have come to us and said, listen, Hearn wants Ricky beat in 12 seconds. And we maneuvered something for 3 minutes. I'm not sure. I'm just saying he was... off the charts on big guys, Jim Hurt.
Next matchup.
That's why you can't even judge with Flair, the grudge with Flair so long, because he thought Flair made Scott Steiner looked bad the time they worked. The Clash of the Champions, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he held that against Rick forever.
Interesting. Look at that. Speaking of herd liking big men, Nikita Koloff is back, and he's got to earn his title shot. He wants Luger, he wants the U.S. title, but he's got to earn it. So he's going to wrestle Tommy Rich and beat him in about 4 minutes. Kind of just, I guess, re-solidifying Koloff as a monster, right?
Yeah. At one time, Tommy Rich was over. The only guy over bigger than him I ever saw was Hulk Hogan at that period. I don't know what happened. And when he came back, we all made the mistake of not resurrecting him. So I just don't know what happened. I don't know if we thought his run was through. We blew that. We surely had enough guys that we could have put in there that Nikita could have beaten and got over rather than sacrificing Tommy Rich.
Yeah, definitely. So Nikita here is going to not be done for the night, so just keep him in the back of your mind. But the next match, Dustin Rhodes defeats Terrence Taylor with Alexander York and Mr. Hughes. Pretty good match. Goes about 8 minutes. Pretty good for Terry Taylor here, a.k.a. Terrence Taylor. You know, obviously, he's the head of the York Foundation. But he's got Alexander York, he's got Mr. Hughes, he's got a whole production here. But Dustin Rhodes remains undefeated here, as Jim Ross mentioned, and gets the big win.
I thought Dustin was a great talent. Dusty was also living vicariously through him. I don't think Dustin gets the credit he deserves. As the worker, he is. I mean, everybody goes gaga on Cody, and rightfully so. But I happen to think that Dustin is as good a worker as Cody. And I think he might have had a tougher road to hoe than Cody. So I respect all the roads, but I really respect Dustin. He was the first one to follow Dusty's footprints, and that's very hard to do. Huh? How would you like to be LeBron James Jr. now? Where everybody's saying he's the greatest of all time. How would you like that? Huh?
A lot of pressure there.
Is that absurd?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Kids in high school, he's the greatest of all time. That's what they were saying about Dustin, the natural, remember?
Yeah, oh yeah. Natural as can be.
Yep. Yeah.
So the next matchup, Big Josh defeats Black Bart, your old buddy Black Bart, in about 4 minutes. Really, the only thing to note here is, you know, it's kind of an okay match, but Big Josh comes to the ring with two live bears. That was kind of the most memorable thing.
Say that? You broke up. I'm sorry.
He came to the ring with two live bears. Pretty nuts.
Absolutely. Absolutely nuts. I don't care how well trained. What if one of them had a bad day? Nobody asked the bear, how you feeling today? if Josh stepped on his foot and turned around, swatted Josh, and then ran off the audience, you know, when you're talking about office, I'm not going to get real heavy details on this, but you remember when I walked Kevin Nash into the ring?
Yeah,
Wizard.
Oh, I was just about to ask you that, because the next match, Oz is up. He beats Tim Parker in 30 seconds. I was going to say, were you the great wizard at this point?
Yeah, do you remember that monkey?
Yes.
Uh-oh. That was his last appearance.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if they edited out what happened, but it was crazy.
Damn. I guess it's not good to work with, what do they say? It's not good to work with children and animals?
Animals. Dr. C. Fields said that. Not good to work with children and animals. The monkey almost took my hand off.
Man, it's crazy just to think, like, okay, they're spending $150,000 or whatever, $120,000 on the set. Nash looks like a complete, like, weirdo with Oz. You're dressed up as a little munchkin wizard, and you got a real monkey that's going nuts. I mean, what a horrible production here.
My secretary is Judy Garland, you know? She was Dorothy, you remember?
Yes, yes. What was her name, your secretary? Sharon Sidello?
Jenny Engel.
Oh, Jenny Engel. I'm sorry. Sidello is the executive. Jenny Engel, that's right. That's right. Okay.
I'd like to stop and say one thing about Janie. Brilliant, brilliant woman. Brilliant in the wrestling business. Caught a lot of mistakes, covered for everybody that ever was on the booking committee that made a mistake, she would correct it. And she started in the Amarillo territory and was a brilliant, brilliant woman in the wrestling business, one of the most brilliant women I've ever met, and comes from a wrestling family. And I can't say enough good things about Janie Engels.
So obviously Oz, the great and powerful, not so much with, you know, like the actual success of the gimmick. Nobody was buying it. Nobody was enjoying it as far as fans were concerned.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I knew that. You get the great and powerful Oz, but you spray paint his hair gray. What the hell was that about? Think about that, JP. Not only was he in a horrible costume, did we cover his body up too with long tights and a singlet-like thing and the gray hair?
Yep.
Wasn't that how it went?
Yeah, JP? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Not a good look. So, and he had that gigantic cape and everything else. Yep.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is this, you couldn't plan this unless you wanted the thing to fail. There's no way you could have came up with this horseshit unless you wanted it to fail.
It was not good. Not good at all. They also, you guys did have a segment too with Paulie Dangerously. He comes out, he has this in-ring interview segment with Stan Hansen. He basically challenges Dustin Rhodes. But how come you guys didn't have, you know, the legendary Stan Hansen actually wrestling on the card? Because he's in his tights and everything, but how come you guys don't have him wrestle?
I think, and again, this is a long time ago, I think they didn't come up with the price for him to wrestle. And I don't think Hansen really wanted to wrestle on some shit card that we were putting together when his life was on the line with the Japanese people. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
He only worked in Japan, basically. And, okay, I'll do a promo, and for the Japanese to see me that I'm doing a promo elevates me, but I'm not working with some guy that doesn't know how to work and could make me look bad in front of the Japanese. I think it was a great decision on Hanson's part.
So then we have Flying Brian Pillman losing to Barry Windham in a tape fist match. The match only goes about 6 minutes or so, but it is very good. Very good match with Barry getting the big W there. I always loved Barry, especially in this time period when he's really... Yeah, he's still in shape. He's still really focused. I mean, Barry Windham is one of the best.
I've been in the ring with a lot of guys. Barry Windham, Ric Flair has said it. I'm sure plenty of other guys have said it. I don't think I've been in a ring with two better baby faces of all times. Barry's right up there. When he was, you know, 220 pounds, 6'5", blonde hair. Should have played in the NFL. Like when you said, when he was in that top-notch shape, he'd throw Barry over the top rope. He wouldn't even touch it. And could land like splattered. He had great comeback. Girls cried like he was an idol when you beat them up. I used to love in Orlando. The crowd was on top of you. And most crowds in Florida, we drew women in Tampa, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, but in Orlando, we drew a lot of them, and they're all crying their eyes out when you get Barry. I mean, I would especially lay them in on Barry in Orlando because I knew, first of all, he couldn't hurt Barry, then he would anticipate anything he'd do if he went to kick him from the... I'd be on the apron, he'd be on the floor. He knew when to just pull it away that I didn't have full extension. And I watched the women go absolutely nuts. I mean, he was, I can't tell you what I think, how great he was.
So then we have the Diamond Mine, which is like a Piper's Pit type segment with DDP. He introduces the Diamond Stud, who, by the way, threw a toothpick. So, you know, the WWE saying that the Razor Ramon gimmick was being used as Scott Hall in WWE, the way wrong, because he was actually doing it as the Diamond Stud here. So they were wrong on that.
Right. Yeah, they sure were. But I was so glad to see Scott get a chance. And maybe this made the Razor Ramon gimmick click for Scott. I've heard different interpretations. I mean, I don't know if my mind's playing tricks on me, but I know this. I was living in the Bahamas. I was only working on weekends. And I flew into Miami, and I was going to work a Friday night in Fort Lauderdale and fly back, and I was staying at the Marriott Airport, and I went to the bar, and Scott was there, and he was meeting McMahon, and he told me that this was the big meeting, and he didn't know what to pitch. And he said, I just need to get a job to take care of my family. And I said, well, I'm going to be here for breakfast. I don't leave till like 11 o'clock because it was a 30-minute flight. And he said, well, they only eat you for breakfast. And he told me that he went in and pitched that idea to Vince, and Vince had never seen the show, never saw the movie. But he said he thought Vince liked it. And then the rest is history.
Yeah, big time. Man, he make a great career for himself. Something that happens next will not be very memorable unless you want to laugh at it, but is a quote-unquote stretcher match between Elegante and Sid. Elegante gets the win in about 2 minutes here. A really, really just quick, awful match. He actually gets the win with the claw hold. He just puts the claw on him and pins him. The stretcher isn't even involved or used in the match. I don't know why they called it a stretcher match. Then Sid is gone, literally. He disappears and goes to the WWF, and eventually SummerSlam 91. He'll be the referee in the match made in heaven, aka really the match made in hell, when it's Hogan and Warrior against the original three phases of fear, the original triangle of terror of Slaughter, Adnan, and Sheiky Baby, aka Colonel Mustafa. But that's a different story for a different day. Elegante gets the win here. You come back out with One Man Gang, and you finally use a stretcher as you try to beat up Elegante with it. He no-sells it, and you guys run away.
Yeah.
Pretty bad all around. You guys coming down kind of saves it a bit, but Sid Elegante, not good.
No, and think about this. That was done on the fly. Us coming down to the gang. That was not scripted. You got to realize, Turner had signed Elegante to the basketball contract. And he couldn't play basketball. And he decided, well, I'm going to transfer it to wrestling. And again, heard loving wrestling. Big guys from wrestling thought, oh, this is it. Well, we could have chased Sid out of there any quicker if we used the blowtorch. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that came from above. And I'm pretty sure that Gang and I did that on the fly. Because the stretcher wasn't used. I said, what the hell is going on here? But a lot of bad shit.
Oh, yeah. So then the next matchup, Hacksaw Butch Reed versus Ron Simmons in a cage match. And Teddy Long must be suspended over the ring in his cage of his own. Ron Simmons gets the win here in about 10 minutes. Not really a bad match. It's actually a pretty good match here between these two, as this is really the breakup of Doom, as Ron Simmons is about to get a big-time push of his own.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't remember how over Hacksaw was. I mean, just like they were running 3 to 4 towns a night.
No, Hacksaw Butch Reed, aka his old LinkedIn. So it's Ron Simmons against Butch Reed.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said Hacksaw. Hacksaw Reed.
Yes. His old funny nickname. Yep.
Two athletes. Yep. What two athletes? Butch didn't get his just due. Ron did, and rightfully so. But Butch was maybe not quite the athlete Ron was. I mean, Ron came in fifth in the Heisman Trophy competition as a defensive lineman. Am I correct?
Oh, yes. Very good. He surprisingly like to be considered that, you know, given the fact he's a defensive lineman, you're never considered. So that's how good he was.
Yeah. I mean, he was I don't think any lineman has ever gotten that kind of voting. Butch played in Kansas, right? A lot of I knew the Patriots drafted a lot of guys from Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Butch had those 22-inch arms. He could work. And he was a great person. But Ron was going to be the breakout star. I was there when they broke Ron in Florida. Great guy.
Next matchup, the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott, who are the WWE World Tag Team Champions, defeat Sting and Lex Luger in about 11 minutes, and arguably one of the best matches of all time, one of the greatest tag team matches of all time. This match is awesome. The crowd is crazy. I think Meltzer didn't give it 5 stars, but he should have, because it's a 5-star match. Unbelievable showing here from the Steiners, Sting and Luger. Nikita Koloff comes out and once goes to attack, Luger hits Sting instead. There's some issues there. Steiner Bros get the win after all the confusion with Koloff and Sting, and then Sting and Koloff are fighting in the back, which leads to a big feud between those two. But man, whew, great tag match.
Yeah, and I have to give it to the Steiners. They knew what their bread and butter was going to be, and that was there. Whether they had been in Japan or not, this wasn't the idea. They were going to give them everything and then asked for a raise because they had a hell of a match. I remember that.
The next match, Bobby Eaton defeats Arn Anderson in a singles match here for the WWE World Television Championship. Bobby Eaton and Arn have a pretty much, I wouldn't say instant classic, but a great match here between those two. Eaton is the new television champion. Good stuff here between those two.
How could you not have a great match with those guys? Think about it. Bobby Eaton. I mean, could you imagine if Bobby could have talked?
Oh, forget about
what
it.
What kind of money he would have drawn. And then you have a guy that could talk and was a great performer. I would have loved to have seen a program with those two. But it's, during that time, we were so short-sighted. And the other thing, Hurd hated Bobby's work, and he hated Arn's work. Could you imagine that?
He's clueless.
I remember him coming to me and said, "Why you got them working? They just paratrooped in. They can't draw flies." I looked at him and I said, "They can work." "Yeah, but they don't blah, blah, blah." I mean, he was, wow. Wow.
And then the World Championship is up next. Ric Flair defeats Tatsumi Fujinami. The match goes about 19 minutes. Very good match here from these two. And I know we kind of talked about a lot earlier and explained all the controversy that kind of was surrounded before it. But now we get a decisive winner here as Flair rolls up Fujinami. Kind of a little bit of a surprise here. But Bill Alfonso, who's the ref, makes the three count. So Flair wins the rematch here and wins technically the title back, but really, according to WCW, he just defended his title and regained it.
Yeah. Bad decision.
What do you think, though, overall of the show? Because there's some really good matches in here. So what do you think overall of the show?
I kind of lean towards middle, but heading down. I think if we wanted to really solidify our deal with Japan and ask absolutely been able to get more, even though we did great. If Fujinami had won that belt and we brought him over, and we put a manager with them, a la Gary Hart, we could have turned Rick into Rocky trying to get the title back from the Russian. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it would have been solidified our business. We could have gone over there and had Rick Rick try to get the belt and have not a dusty finish, but a controversial finish where maybe the referee's counting and Fujinami's got his foot on the ropes, 1-2, and we freeze frame it. Did the referee's eyes come up and see it? He still counted 3. There were so many things we could have done. We could have had Rick bleeding and Fujinami bleeding and the referee stop the match and go over a race. Fujinami's hand, they ask why. Oh, because Flair was bleeding too much. I mean, we could have done some stuff and really, really solidified our deal with Japan and brought over some solid, solid workers.
Well said. Let's head towards the plugs. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 2ManPowerTrip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. And, of course, you can follow Kevin on Instagram at TaskmasterTalks. And head over to Pro Wrestling Tees, ProWrestlingTees.com, and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. Kevin, what else you got going on?
Well, I'll be in 2 weeks. I'll be in Brooklyn, and after that, the week after that, at the end of the month, I'm in Toronto for 3 days. So, our friends that love the show and like the show, come and see me, and we'll talk.
Great stuff, as always. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Task Master Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. Ha ha!
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.